Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop on this Food Friday, September 6th. I'm Ray Graff. Today on the program, we've set the table for a discussion of wines and how best to pair those reds and whites with dinner. Sitting down for today's Food Friday is Christy Frank of Copake Wine Works, Chef Joel Veland of Swift in Kent, Connecticut, and food instructor Peter Barrett. If you have a question about what wines go with fish, beef, chicken, pasta, or whatever else is on your plate, give us a call. 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email your questions and comments to voxpop@wamc.org. But that number is 800-348-2551, a food and wine dinner party with a side of your questions coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Today on the show, we explore the pairings of food and wine with three guests. Christy Frank is with Copake Wine Works, a wine and spirit store that offers products from New York and around the world. The store operates out of a converted 19th century barn that also housed an appliance store and a pharmacy. Chef Joel Veland cooked at award-winning restaurants in New York City and New Orleans before becoming the opening chef at Community Table in Connecticut in 2010. During his 5 years there, it was nominated for 3 James Beard Awards. In 2014, Cooking Light named Joel the best small-town chef in America. His new restaurant, Swift, opened in Kent, Connecticut in 2017, and Orr Hill will open soon. Also joining us today is Peter Barrett. He has been a food writer in the Hudson Valley for more than a decade, runs the podcast CookPod and the Instagram account at CookBlog. He grows, preserves, and cooks as much of his food as possible and teaches others to do the same thing through his writing and classes. And he is a welcome guest on this program whenever he's in town. Christy, Joel, and Peter, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah. I surprised Zach, the engineer. Yes, I went to the guests early. Christy, Joel, and Peter, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Thank you.
Thank you.
If anybody out there has a question about pairing wine and food, give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also tweet your questions and comments at WAMC Vox Pop, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Peter Barrett, this was your idea. Tell us what we're doing here.
Not entirely. I think you deserve some of the credit, because when I was here a few months ago with Michael from the Kingston Wine Company.
Oh, that was a fun show.
It was. And your note at the end of it was, we should do this again, but with food. So I think it's actually your idea.
So it was my idea.
It was.
Well, go figure. Who did you bring?
So Christy is, in addition to being a seriously gifted taster and educator on the subject of wine, has one of the best stores in the Hudson Valley, and also edits our mutual dear friend Alice Firing's online newsletter, The Firing Line. Alice has a brand new book out called
The Firing Line?
Yeah.
William F. Buckley, right?
Yeah, different
okay.
spelling.
Okay.
Alice has a brand new book out called Natural Wine for the People, which I cannot endorse highly enough for anyone who's interested in wine made with little to no intervention. It's fantastic.
What do you mean, little to no intervention?
Farmed organically and not a lot of chicanery in the cellar.
Is there generally chicanery in the cellar?
But Christy's really the one to ask about that. But yes, the short answer is yes.
Well, let's introduce Joel, and then let's find out about the chicanery.
Well, Joel and I met about a year ago at a big event in Hudson, and he's a terrific cook and an all-around nice guy, and I've been following him for quite some time. And he seemed like another Hudson Valley compatriot in terms of the spirit that he brings to the work that he does, and I wanted to... Yeah, hang out and drink some wine with him.
You made it up here from Connecticut in the nick of time.
Yeah, I was a little long drive, but it was great. It's a beautiful drive.
Well, that's great. It's good that you made it, and we're glad to have you here. All right, now Christy. First of all, I've read some of your stuff online. The 12 myth busting wines I thought was very entertaining, and I learned a lot. I don't know too much about wine. What is this chicanery that can go on in the wine cellar?
Well, we always tend to think about wine as just the beautiful rolling vineyards, and you press the grapes and then voila, you suddenly have wine. But
right.
There's a lot more that can go into it.
Yeah.
A lot of wines, there are, I think Alice has the number at about 72 different ingredients that can be used to make a wine that are perfectly legal, and lots of processes and things that can happen. And some wines, depending on what the wine might be, if you're going into the supermarket and you're buying something and they're making millions of bottles of it, you want, well, I don't want, but many people want the wine to be as consistent as Coca-Cola. So there are a lot of tricks that can be done in the cellar to ensure that happens.
Such as?
Reverse osmosis machines to make the alcohol be a certain level. You can use all sorts of enzymes to give the wine a certain texture. Lots of things. Lots of sounding things.
And you write about that stuff, and we'll hear more about it as the show goes on. Questions about wine on food pairing today, 800-348-2551. All right, Peter, you take it as we start here with the pairings, and tell me about what we are doing.
Okay, well, so Joel brought a bunch of different dishes. I think we're going to start with the pizza because Swift has a beautiful wood-fired oven, and they make some astonishingly beautiful pizzas.
Now, this is new to me. You can drink wine with pizza.
You can drink wine with anything.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I thought beer was what you did with pizza.
You can do that, too.
Okay.
Right. Wine has fewer carbs for people who care about that sort of nonsense.
As you can tell, I'm not too meticulous about that. All right, what pizza did we bring?
So today we brought a pink tiger pizza.
What?
It's called the pink tiger. There's a specific type of pepper that's called a pink tiger pepper.
Yeah.
And we grow it at a farm 10 minutes from the restaurant. And it's called Rock Cobble Farm. And we take those peppers every season and we make an oil with it. And that oil is then what we use on top of the pizza. And so it's a very simple pizza that's basically just made with hand-stretched mozzarella, really good tomatoes, and pecorino cheese.
Oh, that sounds good.
And then we just squirt a little bit of the hot oil on top of it, and it's the flavor profile of fresh pepper that's grown locally. I just feel there's certain peppers that have so much more tropical flavor and nuance flavors than most other just average peppers, hot peppers.
And what sort of a wine would we have with this?
Well, we're going to do, because of the spice, we're actually going to do a little compare and contrast. I have two Rieslings that I brought. Both are from New York State. One is dry, and one has a little bit of sweetness to it. And they'll both be absolutely pleasant with the pizza, because anything is better with wine than without wine. But I want to get your thoughts on which one you kind of like.
This is exciting. Now, I must confess that in reading your 12 myth-busting wines online, I think it was foodandwine.com, maybe?
It was, I believe.
You know, it's one of the myths was that Riesling has to be sweet, and that's what I thought. I don't really drink very much wine, but apparently that is not the case.
That is absolutely not the case. Sweet is probably one of the trickiest words in terms of wine tasting.
Yeah, and children.
And children, yes. Sweet, sugar and spice, and not so nice. Sweetness just is the presence or lack of presence of residual sugar in a wine, and Riesling, there are a lot of Rieslings that have been sweet, and a lot of Rieslings that used to be on the market were quite sweet to the point of not being pleasant. But sweetness is a beautiful thing when it's balanced by acidity, and it works very well with salty. It works very well with heat. And well, here, give this one a try. Let's just put it in your mouth, put a little piece in your mouth, see what you think.
Well, first of all, the pizza, Joel, is off the charts. I mean, this is beautiful.
Thank you.
And this wine going with it.
Yeah, it's quite good, the wine.
Now, is this the dry one? To me, this tastes sweet.
This is the dry one.
It's pretty balanced, though.
But it's very balanced. Now, when we try the next one, you're really going to see what sweet means. But Riesling is kind of it's a misunderstood grape because the flavors that you get in it are flavors that most people would say are sweet. You get floral notes, you get like peach notes, you get like kind of juicy, peachy fruits. But the wine itself is technically dry. It does not have residual sugar.
It's a very nice round taste. And is this from the Finger Lakes, you said?
This is from fruit that is grown in the Finger Lakes, and the wine is made in the Hudson Valley.
Really tasty.
It's Eminence Road, and it's one of my favorite wines. It's a great price. They're always under $25. They're made by a fantastic couple, and they're just really wonderful wines to have
Riesling
on the shelf.
Riesling, in general, is very underappreciated, I think.
Yes, it is.
But there's a lot of it made in New York State.
There is. It's
cold tolerant, so it can handle. The Finger Lakes are actually a milder climate than the Hudson Valley in general because of the lakes and just the sort of microclimates that they have there. But Riesling in general does not die even in our savage winters. And some of the more delicate wine varieties have a harder time.
You know, one of the things I learned reading the article online from Christy was that there is a lady in Vermont who makes a kind of a magical sort of a bubbly wine. And the grapes have to be very hardy.
Yes, she is. Those wines are La Garagista, and we have one of her wines that we will try a little bit later in the program. It's not her sparkling wine, but she works with a lot of they're hybrid grapes, and they tend to be very underappreciated and very misunderstood. But Deirdre of La Garagista wants to work organically,
right?
And in these really cold climates, Vermont is even colder than the Finger Lakes. You can choose your grapes and work a certain way, or she chooses to work with these hybrids so that she can work organically and biodynamically.
We have Christy Frank here today, Chef Joel Veland, and Peter Barrett. We talk food and wine pairings on this Food Friday edition of Vox Pop. The number is 800-348-2551. Joel Veland, explain the pizza again while I take another bite and get ready for the sweet Riesling.
So for me, pizza is all about the dough and all about the crust. So the important part about this is that it's no commercial yeast. And we ferment the dough for 3 days, which allows for a sourness to develop and also allows for almost a sweetness to develop and really brings out the natural flavors of the grains.
So you make your own dough.
Yeah, we make our own dough. It takes 3 days to ferment. So when we make a dough today, we're not going to use it until 3 days from now. So that takes a lot of planning and logistics. And then the sauce, we chose the sauce from 11 different brands of organic tomatoes that we did a tasting cubic, a blind tasting with the staff. And this is the sauce.
How many in the test? How many people?
15.
Okay. So yeah. It's scientifically rigorous.
Yes.
Okay, good.
Yes.
Well, the pizza is delicious. And this is a different taste of this wine.
Yes, it is. Now, the flavors are rather similar, but the big difference is that this is a semi-dry wine. So what you're tasting is actual sweetness in the technical nerdy sense.
That's funny. Now, it shows you what a Luddite I really am. I'm getting more acid on that wine.
Wine is all, it's all about the balance, and that's the thing about a good sweet wine is that there will be a lot of acid to it, which is what makes the sweetness actually pleasant. So when you taste this one, the Herman Wiemer is the producer. They're up in the Finger Lakes as well. It does have like a little bit more of that zesty
little
acidity
edge
to it, a little bit more edge. Whereas the Eminence Road, it's a little fuller body. It's a little richer, and you don't necessarily notice the acidity as much.
Chris, just hang on just a moment. Our engineer, Zach, is gesticulating. It's time for a break here. In fact, we're overdue. Christy Frank is here, Chef Joel Veland, and Peter Barrett. It's food and wine pairings on Vox Pop. You got a question? Give us a call, 800-348-2551. We'll be back. It's Food Friday. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. Food and wine pairings on the program today. Christy Frank is here, Chef Joel Veland, and Peter Barrett. Before we get to the next pairing, Chef Veland, tell me about Swift, and then tell me about the restaurant that'll be opening soon.
So Swift is it's a great little restaurant in Kent, Connecticut that features, we have an a la carte menu that has dishes that range from appetizers, entrees, and really great desserts. But we also do wood-fired pizza. And we try to be as sustainable and organic of a restaurant as we can. We also work with a lot of the local farms in the area. And so that's pretty much our credo. We have a pretty strong ethos behind our cooking. And, yeah, that's pretty much it. We try to serve delicious food and do it well. So.
And the new place is Ore Hill, and that will be opening soon.
Yeah, Ore Hill is a more fine dining version. It'd be a totally different menu and kind of style.
Also in Kent?
It's also in Kent. It's actually
housed. How are you
going to
compete against yourself?
Building.
Oh, what? I don't understand.
The price point will be quite vast, and it's
so the riffraff goes to one, and then the
Well, I think a lot of people really like hanging out at the bar at Swift, and everyone likes to go to Swift, but there's not enough places for special occasions and for date nights.
When do you think that'll open?
We're hoping it opens this year. So we're trying to get it going.
Taking your time. Good for you.
Yeah.
Hey, Peter Barrett, what's happening with you? You were going far afield.
Going to France in a week.
Oh, really?
Leading another culinary tour, this time in southwestern France. 10 days of foie gras, truffles, Armagnac, and a lot of home cooking.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Bring your Alka-Seltzer with you?
No, I'm not.
No?
But they think they have pharmacies there. I'll probably be okay.
Okay, all right, fair enough.
Should that unlikely event arise.
And Christy, tell me a little more about Copaic Wine Works.
Ah, Copaic Wine Works. Well, we've been open for about 4 years, and we are, I like to say, we're in the middle of everything, in the center of everything, in the middle of nowhere. We're in thriving downtown Copaic.
Yeah.
There's no stoplight. And it's, I used to have a shop down in New York City, and the opportunity arose to open a shop up here. So I jumped at it.
A little different vibe, yeah?
A little different vibe, but I just love selling wine to people. So it's, you know, it's kind of wine 101, and after 4 years doing it, we're starting to have a great little customer base that's kind of getting into the quirkier things.
Now, this is interesting. So do you fancy yourself, to some extent, an entrepreneur and an educator?
I think you have to be a little of both to open a wine shop in Copaic.
Yeah. And are people, are the customers now maybe taking it up a notch?
They
sophistication?
Sophistication is one way to put it, but really just adventurousness.
Yeah.
So, you know, people are, I call it the there's a grape called the pick pool, and no one's ever heard of the pick pool, but it's a crisp, fresh, easy grape. And once people trust you after about 2 years, you offer them a pick pool, they see that they like it, and then suddenly the world is literally your oyster or their oyster, because it goes grape with oysters.
Ah.
But it takes a while. People want to believe that you're not trying to sell them weird wines just for the
sake
of weird
wines. Like the one that tastes like wet dog.
Oh, well, that's a Pinotage, and that would be a bad Pinotage.
Really?
And we do not sell bad Pinotage.
What's a good Pinotage taste like? A cat?
A good Pinotage tastes like, it's got a certain earthiness, a smokiness.
Ah,
that
wet dog, smoky wine.
The wet dog translates into a little smokiness.
Yeah,
interesting. Which is quite pleasant. It's still very much a love it or leave it grape.
Our number is 800-348-2551. If you have a question about food or wine and wine pairing, or just wine or just food, we have a chef here. We have a wine expert. We have Peter Barrett, who knows a little bit about everything. And what's our next pairing? Oh, that's okay. Boy, you get up and around, don't you, Chef?
I'm over here prepping on the side.
Oh, I hear you, man.
While I get ready here. So right here, we're going to have a row 7 koji nut squash that's been roasted. And then we're also taking the same squash and shaving it thin so it's raw.
Yep.
And we're mixing that together. And then we're also dressing it with fermented chili water. That it's all these peppers, both sweet and spicy, that have been fermented with salt. And just store it over time so that they basically turn into this wonderful, beautiful umami-flavored water.
How much time?
I'd say we did it. We used about a couple months.
Really?
That's good, yeah. And then—
And you've tried this before? It'll be okay?
Yes.
Okay.
And I also seasoned it with some medjool date syrup. And then we dressed it with a togarashi seasoning, which is a Japanese spice, but we make it ourselves, which has like sesame seeds and garlic and different spices and chili and togarashi chilies dried.
What was your inspiration for this? Is this your own creation?
Yeah, this tasting was the inspiration. I honestly haven't done this before.
You've never tried? Oh, okay, great.
I've done these. I've done these vegetables before, but just not in this combination.
So we really don't know. All right, Christy, break out the wet dog wine for this one. Let's see here. Okay.
No wet dog.
No wet dog. What are we going to drink with this?
I think with this one, well, this is the fun thing about food and wine pairing is you don't have to have a set order or a set plan, because there were some things I was going to pour with this one, but now that I'm tasting it, I think we're going to mix it up a little bit and do Chardonnay.
All right. Chardonnay.
Is this
very good.
You just poured this for me?
Yeah.
Excellent. Thank you.
This is a very interesting dish.
Isn't it?
It's got some sweetness.
Jump in really quickly and mention that the squash that Joel used for this is grown from seeds that were developed by Row 7, which is a company that's affiliated with Stone Barns.
Mm.
In addition to the Hudson Valley Seed Company, which used to be formerly known as the Library, there are, was it Baker Creek and Fruition? There are more and more companies that are breeding vegetables specifically to grow in certain climates like ours. And row 7's taking it further, and they're actually like, this is this isn't the center cut one, right? This is the other one.
No, I have the center cut next.
So they're breeding for specific traits. The center cut, which comes up next, is like a zucchini, except that it looks like a really long butternut. So all the seeds are at one end, and the rest of it you can slice like a fillet. And that's why they call it the center cut squash, because there are no seedy bits.
Yeah, there are these plant breeders that work at specific universities around the country are designing these new varietals that are specifically designed not only to be more delicious and for chefs, but also, like he said, to grow in climates that they wouldn't normally be able to do.
Hmm. I think that the Chardonnay is a great selection with this.
I picked it because, I mean, there are a million rules to wine and food pairing, or there are no rules at all. The most important rule is to just drink some wine with your food.
Right.
But a lot of times people will come into the shop and say, I want a wine to go with my dinner, and it's chicken. And I always ask, well, how are you preparing it? Because it's ultimately the sauces and the spices that are one of the most important things when you're picking out your wine, and the texture. And this wine, the food, this dish actually has a bit of a weight to it.
It certainly does.
And it's got some heaviness. But Chardonnay, at least in this version, which is from Wild Arc, it's got some nice texture to it. It's got some body and weight to it. But it's a fairly neutral, subtle Chardonnay. So the idea is that let's let the food shine, and the Chardonnay just kind of gives a little bit of weight and kind of plays, not second fiddle, but it's like the background music.
I think this is velvety.
Yeah.
I would say
mm-hmm.
this Chardonnay is velvety. Yeah. Now, interestingly, you said, I made a game time decision and changed the wine. What wine had you originally chosen for this?
I was going to do some reds with it, and I think I also want us to try one of those reds with it just to see kind of how we can play around with that as well.
That's a great question. For neophyte wine people like myself, you know, you hear, hey, never a red wine with fish, never a red wine with chicken. As a wine expert, Christy, at Copic Wineworks, would you ever say, oh, yeah, throw the Bordeaux down with a little fish?
Probably not the Bordeaux, but red wine and fish, yeah, all
really?
The time. Bordeaux as a wine tends to be a little bit more tannic. It's got that sort of bitter astringency to it, balanced by the fruit. That sort of tannic character combined with, say, an oily fish, that's one of the few pairings that actually will have sort of a chemical reaction in your mouth that'll taste like metal. It's not pleasant.
You're kidding me.
But like a lighter, juicy wine, like the one I'm about to pour, a Pinot Noir, or this is going to be a Syrah, but it's from Australia, but it's a lighter style. This would go really well with fish.
You know, there's a great Monty Python sketch from the early 70s about Australian wines and how they're fit for hand-to-hand combat. Australian wines have made some real strides over the last 30 years, as American wines have.
One of my other part-time gigs is I happen to work part-time for Wine Australia as well.
Ah, okay.
But I've been loving Australian wine since I opened the shop and mentioned, I think, at least two of them in that article that you were talking to. But they've made tremendous strides, and I think this one is one that's a little different than I think what most people think of when they think of Australia.
Now, in the progression of Australian wines or New Zealand wines or American wines, is this the vineyard, the people who make the wine learning more, or is this the evolution of the grapes? Now the plants evolving.
It's a little bit of both. Some of these, you know, we talk about New World wines and Old World wines. Australia, South Africa, New Zealand, the United States would be considered New World, but in many cases we've got some vines here that are older than what you would find in France. There was a little louse, it was called Phylloxera. It's a whole other story. But there are old wines in old vines, and those old vines do something to the grapes, that to the wines that are different than the younger wines. But you also find a lot of these New World countries started perhaps making wines that were driven for export, and they were one particular style that the markets might have wanted. But then over time, the people growing them and farming the land have become more confident with what they want to make, and they're making wines that they want to drink or that aren't necessarily made specifically for one market. They're speaking a little bit more to what the land is giving them.
We are joined today by Christy Frank of Copic Wine Works, Chef Joel Veland of Swift Restaurant in Kent, Connecticut, soon to be Orr Hill as well, and Peter Barrett, who has a podcast, Cook Pod. He travels the globe eating things. Our number here is 800-348-2551. So this week, what we just drank was what?
This is a Syrah, but it's a lighter, we would almost call it a smashable red. It's lighter, it's juicier, you get a little bit of spiciness to it. It's made using a method called whole cluster, where they throw the whole grape bunches into the vat. And it's just got a kind of a lightness and a spiciness, which I think contrasts nicely with the weight and the spice of the dish that we just had.
I think your first choice, the Chardonnay, was a better bet with this
food.
Oh,
you like that one.
Yeah, and where was that from, by the way?
That one is from Wild Ark Farm, and that's another New York State producer.
That's
and
really good.
In the brand new September issue of Chronogram, I have a profile of them for anyone
where
who's
are
interested.
They?
They're down in Pine Bush.
And how long have they been doing that? That's like a very well-done wine.
It is. This is, I think, just their fourth year. So they're brand new. Yeah. Yeah, he's talented. Very nice guy.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. Are we ready for the next pairing?
Oh, yes.
All right, what do you got?
We have some extremely fresh striped bass. And so I sliced it raw, very thin, and we're putting it on center cut, row 7 center cut squash.
Yeah.
That's been cooked in the wood fired oven. I'm seasoning it with a little bit of grilled lemon, the insides of the grilled lemon.
Yeah.
I'm actually putting a little bit of white soy and a little sage brown butter on it as well.
So raw fish, yeah? Okay. Well, you know, it's not my usual scene to eat raw fish, but we'll give it a shot here. I hope you have a good, strong wine to go along with it. The number is 800-348-2551. It's food and wine pairings today. Chef Joel Veland has brought some beautiful food. Christy Frank has brought some wine. Peter Barrett, he's the
the referee?
The ringleader of the whole thing. The number is 800-348-2551. Okay, so we have this lovely raw bass. And what wine will we be having with it?
We do have a nice strong wine.
Good.
It is a Sauvignon Blanc from New Zealand.
Is that cloudy?
With some skin contact, and it's definitely cloudy.
Why is it cloudy?
It's cloudy because they're not filtering it.
Oh.
And it's a little bit more, if you could see it, it's a little bit more deeply colored than your kind of typical Sauvignon Blanc. Because it could be called an orange wine, except it's not really orange.
Oh.
And orange wines are white wines that are made the same way that red wines are made. So they have skin contact.
Interesting. Now, you guys can talk out loud. It's a very loose show.
Okay, yeah.
What do you got?
So that piece is for you.
Oh, thanks a lot. Okay, we'll give this a shot here. This wine, I smell a little citrusy. Am I wrong?
You're never wrong,
okay.
But you are right.
Okay. All right.
Well, Christy's chewing, I'll say yes, and it picks up beautifully on that grilled lemon with the slight bitter edge to it.
All right, keep talking, Peter, because I'm going to try this now.
Okay. Yeah, every time I come, we try to have Ray eat or drink something that he's never had before
right.
On live radio.
And the slight sweetness of the wine, I like that to balance out that bitterness of the lemon. It's great. Grilled lemon.
It's a very handsome pairing, I think.
Mm-hmm. And Sauvignon Blanc is Sauvignon Blanc is a grape. A lot of times you want something slightly herbaceous, slightly like grassy or sort of lemon verbena.
I love this pairing.
In your wine. And you'll get that. This Sauvignon Blanc has that.
Yeah.
But not the problem, but sometimes Sauvignon Blanc as a wine will be super, super, super light bodied. And this dish has a lot of flavor, a lot of texture. So I thought having that skin contact would give it a little bit more weight, amplify the flavors a little bit more, and just give it like a little extra edginess to it, and that bitterness which you get from the skins, which we get all the time in red wine, but you don't see it in white wine.
Yeah.
This wine has it, and it works,
perfect.
Really well.
Yeah, perfect combination. Yeah. And Chef Veland, I was, you know, you said the raw fish, and I got skeptical. I got to say, that is delicious.
Yes, it is.
What a nicely prepared.
He's off mic right now cutting corn.
Thank
so.
You very much.
Very good job. All right, let's take a break here. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's food and wine pairings. Peter Barrett, Chef Joel Veland, and Christy Frank. You can join us if you want to call 800-348-2551. It's Vox Pop Food Friday. Ray Graff with you at 800-348-2551. Food and wine pairings today. Learning new things with Peter Barrett and Chef Joel Veland. Christy Frank as well. Tell you what, let's jump on the phones and grab a call before we do the next pairing. David in Saratoga. David.
Hey, how are you? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
Can you hear me all right?
Yeah, man. Can you hear us all right?
It's been a pleasure. I'm driving down 87, heading back to Glens Falls, and I'm like, holy. I know Joe. I know Joe. He did an event up here called the Festival of the Senses at the Lake George Club.
Oh, yeah.
The first time. Yeah, and then we did the Pitney Farms together, and this guy's got game.
He sure does.
Thank you, man. I appreciate you saying that.
Pleasure. Thanks. Now, I actually... And I did it while I was driving, which is illegal. But I text John Sconzo, Dr. John Sconzo, and I said, "Hey, man, he's doing an incredible interview."
And you should see the food he brought.
Your food sounds fantastic over the radio.
Yeah,
well that's cool. I'm glad
it's that good. Hey, David, thanks for the call. 800-348-2551. Is our telephone number, and we'll take one more here, and then we'll go back to the next pairing. Julie and Troy. Julie, you're on.
Oh, great. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm curious. The older I get, the more I've found, like, certain wines give me a headache.
Yeah.
And I didn't know if there's just a certain ingredient or a certain type of wine that, you know, is more, you're more susceptible, you know, to get a headache with.
I have heard this.
It's partly two things. Partly it is, unfortunately, just getting older because I definitely can't drink quite as much as I used to in my youth.
Ditto.
But part of it is, I mean, as I was saying kind of at the beginning, there are a lot of things that can go into a wine that you don't necessarily know about, and it could be any one of those. A lot of people want to blame sulfites, but that's, in most cases, if you can eat dried fruit, that's not the problem.
Okay.
But it's
residual sugar.
There's probably not the residual sugar because it could be, but there's still not that much sugar in wine. It's just, I think in many cases, it's partly just a factor of getting older. But if you want to, the best thing to do is to try some minimal intervention wines where you can talk to the shop owner, you can talk to whoever you're buying it from, and just understand what is happening in the vineyard, what is happening in the winery, and then kind of like a cleanse, you strip it down and you build it back up from that.
So in your estimation, it could be that these are the added ingredients that are causing this. How do you know it's just not the grapes?
It can be.
It can be. It's really hard to know.
Too many variables to nail it down.
Is it only after a glass, Julie, or is it 5-6 bottles that does it?
No, just the glass.
Oh, okay.
I'm just laughing. I think I'm going to have to do a wine cleanse.
I think so, yes.
Wine cleanse. Well, thank you very much for the call. Have a great weekend.
It is possible if you go to a shop like Christie's to buy a wine where the ingredients are quite literally grape juice and nothing else.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so if you start with a product like that, where it's fermented only with a native yeast that grows on the grapes themselves in the vineyard, and the vineyard's farmed organically, so there are no chemical additives there, and there's nothing being added or taken out in the cellar, you can then start with grape juice and determine if you have a reaction to that. And if you do, then that's unfortunate because it's the grape juice.
Yeah.
But if it's not, then you may have found your way back into wine in a more enjoyable way.
Oh, that's interesting.
And it could even be you try that with one particular grape. Each grape is different, and different grapes will have different tannic levels and different histamine levels. So you can try that, and you can still play around with different low intervention, no intervention wines. Maybe Cabernet does not work for you, but maybe Pinot Noir does. It's a fun game to play.
Interesting, though, because you say that the mass producers, one of the things they want to do is make it reproducible and make it one bottle in month X be the same as another bottle in month Z. And if you're trying these that are not done that way, then how do you know? I mean, maybe you get one bad bottle, you get a headache.
It's possible. Well, you're not
a bad bottle,
no,
but a different bottle.
There will be bottle variation, and there will be vintage variation in these wines that we call natural wines. But in the same way that if you're trying to eat local food and organic food, you're bread that's made from the mothers, you tolerate that sort of variation in your food.
Yeah.
It's the same thing with wine. Wine is basically a food product, even if we don't think of it that way.
Hey, what is this you gave me here, Joel?
Okay, so this is my version of what is known as mazorca.
Mazorca.
And mazorca is a Colombian dish that would be something that I would like to make. Like, it's easy to make it, really.
Yeah.
And you can make it at home, like where you're watching a football game. It's the perfect thing for it. Essentially what it is grilled corn.
Okay.
That's then just cut off the cob.
Yeah.
And then dressed with... You can do it with mayonnaise, but I made an aioli that has – so aioli is just a little garlic and mayonnaise.
Yep.
And I put smoked paprika, lime juice, coriander, cumin, things like this. And then I made some ricotta, and then I kind of dried the ricotta and salted it to do – and smoked it to make like kind of a more smoked ricotta salata type cheese and sprinkled that on there. And then I took – Upstate Abundance potatoes. This is a type of varietal of a potato.
Yeah.
Also offered by Rose 7 Seeds. And they make the best potato chips.
They're beautiful.
I mean, you cook these at 325 degrees, and you can use any kind of canola oil, grapeseed oil, or animal fat. I used animal fat. And they just cook up perfectly. And they're beautiful. And so we just sprinkle that on top as well. And then it's basically corn with potato chips and cheese.
This is one of the nicest. You got to make some of this. I'll bring it for my Giants game on Sunday.
Exactly.
What's the wine?
Oh, this is a good one.
Well, we have two wines. I poured a little bit of the Riesling just because that sweetness. Corn has a lovely, yummy sweetness to it. And this was the Hermann Weimer that I poured, which has sweetness, which goes with the smokiness and the saltiness and the corn. And then I also poured a red one, which is Chateau Musard's Hochar label, which is from Lebanon. And this is a red that has, it's a blend of Grenache, Cabernet, Senso, and Carignan, which are grapes that you would find a lot of them in the south of France. And it's got a smokiness to it. It's got a little bit of a juiciness to
it. That's this one?
Mm-hmm. That's the red one.
I love this wine.
It's good, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really love
that wine.
It's
a great story behind this vineyard, too.
Oh, do tell.
So the Hochar family, Serge Hochar, this was a winery that was founded in 1939. Serge's father founded it, and Serge took it over. And they're in the Bekaa Valley. They've seen all sorts of war and strife, and they have they have these stories of harvesting the grapes in the middle of civil war and strife and putting signs on top of their trucks so that they wouldn't be bombed, so they could actually get the wines into the winery. And there have been, through everything, there were only two vintages where they didn't produce wine. And it's just one of the most sort of storied, wonderful, perseverance wineries in the world.
Such character in the taste.
Mm-hmm. It's like nothing else.
It's really good stuff. And you said the white. Now, I'm sorry, I was so taken by tasting the red that I didn't hear your description.
The white is the sweet Riesling, the off-dry Riesling
we
had.
Yes, so that was the second Finger Lakes Riesling that we had. And that's
that will
bit,
go just as well with this.
And that's a little bit more stories. You can either say opposites attract, or you can say birds of the feather. The Riesling is a little bit more kind of birds of the feather. You get the sweetness with the sweetness of the corn. And then the Chateau Musard that's opposites attract.
If I was having this with my football game, which I'm not sure that I would ever have anything other than beer at a football game, this wine would be the one to go with it. I mean, the Lebanese wine is fantastic.
Yeah. And I wanted to show that you can have same dish, white and red work just as well.
Yeah, and a vegetable dish. I mean, apart from the animal fat that the chips were cooked in, this is a vegetarian dish, and it's not, it's light, it's nimble, and the red works really well with it. I mean, we'll say this is not a heavy, opaque 16% alcohol red wine.
No, but
it's
it has
on the lighter
body.
Side, but it's a real red wine. Yeah.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. If you have a question about wine or food or pairing the two. Let's go to John in Hyde Park. John.
Hey, Ray. It's John Fisher.
Hello, John Fisher. How you doing, man?
I'm great.
Good.
I just wanted to say that this is one of the best groups you've had on this show.
Really?
In a long time, because the quality of information is just fantastic. And for God's sakes, listen to them.
Me? Your check's in the mail.
I think you know me better than that, John.
Paying attention to authority?
I don't really drink wine on a regular basis, but every time we have it on the show, I love it. And we found some good ones today.
Thing, they also, I know a lot of those wines, and the pairings sound great. One thing I did want to mention about the a little story about the wine additives is that Mega Purple is kind of a secret ingredient used by a lot of wineries to make their wine really dark. And Garrett Oliver, the brewmaster at Brooklyn Brewery, made a batch of wine, of beer called Mega Purple. He used only a gallon of Mega Purple and 200 gallons of beer, and it turned a dark, dark, dark purple.
Huh.
So there is some.
What is Mega Purple made out of?
It's grape.
It's actually a grape base. Product.
Oh, okay.
Let her answer.
All right.
So it's a grape base. It's basically food coloring. And the reason it exists is because, well, there's many reasons, but the big one is because many people think if a wine is not opaque and purple, it's not a good wine.
Right.
So there are many reasons why a wine would not be deeply purple. Many of them legitimate, many of them have to do with the way that it's produced, but if you want to have your wine look a certain way, that's why it exists.
And you don't like that idea, right?
No, I like my wine as variable as I like my tomatoes.
Hmm. Hey, John.
That's why a lot of bourbons and whiskeys are darker. They just add caramel coloring to make it look richer.
All right. Well, you please text me a list of all of those bourbons that put coloring in them, and I'll never get them again.
It's most of them.
Yeah, it is.
Really?
That's all of them.
All right. Well, then I'll never drink bourbon again.
You can't take any more bourbon.
All right.
Yeah.
Hey, John, let's go Mets. Thanks for the call, man. 800-348-2551. Let's go to Bill in Gilderland. Bill.
Yes, sir.
You're on.
I have a question for the young lady about wines.
Sure. Ask away.
Oh, okay. One of the best Malbecs I've ever had in my life was a Red Schooner, number 5. Wonderful, wonderful wine. A lot of fruit forward with a nice aftertaste. No, the tannins were nice and soft. It is a little on the pricey side. Is there anything else or any other Malbec you could recommend that might kind of fill that gap?
Well, what might be fun to try, Malbec, we tend to think of it as being the great grape of Argentina, and it's certainly taken over Argentina, but it's actually a French grape. And if you can find a wine from the region of Cahors or from somewhere in that particular part, the southwest of France, it's the same grape. They may call it Caux. They may call it Malbec. They have started to put Malbecs on the labels because they know we know what Malbec is now. But it's going to have that same really dark flavor, that fruit flavor, but it'll have a little bit more structure to it. So it's just a little bit of a variation on the same theme, but because it's from France and it's not from the place where we typically expect to find our Malbecs, it tends to be a really good value.
Very good. Excellent. The
Cahors is the region.
Cahors.
And if you go into a wine shop and you say, I want a Malbec, but I want one from France where it's originally from, hopefully they'll know what you're talking about and they'll be able to help you. And if they don't, come to another workshop.
All right, thanks for the call. Now let's jump over to Connecticut. Joan, you're on.
Hi, I was just wondering which, you didn't mention the name of the Sauvignon Blanc from New Zealand earlier, and I was wondering what that was.
Oh, yes, so that is the Hermit Ram is the producer, and it is, it's got a little ram on the label, and it is from Canterbury, from the South Island.
Okay, so it's called Hermit Ram, R-A-N, did you say?
R-A-M, like the animal.
Oh, I see. Okay. Thank you.
Good stuff. Joan, thanks for the call. Now, did we try the wine from the lady in Vermont?
No, we're about to.
We're almost out of time here. We got about 3 minutes to go, so.
Let's bust it out.
Oh.
Let's bust it out. I thought your write-up was so good in that 12 myth-busting wines that I have to try. This isn't the bubbly that you mentioned, but...
This is not the bubbly. This is her Loup Garou.
Yeah.
And this is actually made in the same style as a Valpolicella Ripasso or like an Amarone.
Mm-hmm.
And we were at one point talking about having a little blue cheese, which is a really salty, really intensely flavored cheese.
I bet it would go good with this corn... cooked corn
and ricotta thing, yeah.
Yeah.
Smoked ricotta?
Yeah, actually, it probably will.
And like Deirdre Heekin, who makes these wines up in Vermont, She's also a very gifted writer, in addition to being a great winemaker. She has an uncanny ability to using nothing but hybrid grapes, which are hybrids between what are called vinifera, which is Vitis vinifera, the European wine varieties mm-hmm. that go back untold millennia, and our native, like Concord style grapes, which are much more resistant to cold and pests and are much easier to grow in somewhere like Vermont, which is needless to say not very hospitable. But she has an ability, some of those hybrids can tend towards flavors which really get into like grape juice, Welch's grape juice.
Right.
Not really what you look for in a wine unless you're really into Manischewitz. And she has this uncanny ability to make things with hybrid grapes that don't.
Well, this
taste
is interesting.
Like hybrid.
It's interesting that you say that because body wise, at first time it hits your tongue, you say, okay, this has a grape juice feel, but it's not sweet like that. Mm-mm. You got plenty of grape taste. But it's got a nice character.
Yeah. It's got almost sort of like dried fruits, almost kind of like port, but not syrupy. And it is dry, but there's a real ripeness to it. And this sort of flavor with like figs, with blue cheese, with salty things, it would work really well.
To me, this tastes like New England. Mm-hmm. This has a northeastern.
Yeah. It's got that nice sour aftertaste.
Yeah. It's really interesting.
Mm-hmm. I really like it a lot.
I'm surprised at how good the wines of our region made locally have gotten over the last decade. Because I moved here in 2010, and there was maybe only a handful of wines that in the whole New England area that were worth putting on your menu. And now, I mean, I'm shocked at these selections here. They're so good.
That was the gist of my Wild Arc profile, is that there's a new generation with a very different set of priorities, not just with different palates, because they've come up in a more educated and enlightened America, I think, culinarily and agriculturally, but with a different agenda in terms of the way they want things to grow and be produced.
Well, and a lot of the wine regions and wineries that you've seen up in this area have sort of been led by tourism. Mm-hmm. So people come to you and drinking the wine is only part of the experience.
Yeah.
But what Deirdre does at La Garagista, what Todd is doing at Wild Arc, what a ton of these new Finger Lakes producers are doing, in many cases, they don't own the land. They're making the wine from fruit. They know who to buy the fruit from. So they're not working on this tourist model. They're working on a model of we're making wines that we want to taste like where they're from, and we're going to go out and sell them. People aren't going to be enamored by the beautiful view. The wines have to stand on their own.
Well, this was a lot of fun. Christy Frank, Chef Joel Veland, and Peter Barrett, thank you for being here. Support comes from Henry's at the Farm Restaurant, Milton, serving contemporary American cuisine and craft cocktails, located in the Hudson Valley's Orchard and Wine Country at Buttermilk Falls Inn and Spa, buttermilkfallsinn.com. Spirit House, Amherst, Massachusetts, a family-owned wine, beer, and spirits retailer offering organically farmed wines from around the world. Wine tastings Saturday afternoons, spirithaus.com. Big Y, family-owned and operated market with locations throughout the Berkshires, celebrating more than 80 years of serving communities throughout New England. BigY.com. At Cafe Capriccio, Chef Jim Rua, working to preserve and maintain the traditions of Italian cuisine and hospitality since 1982 on Grand Street in Albany, New York, cafecapriccio.com. Once again, thanks to Christy Frank and Joel Veland and Peter Barrett for being here. Thank you for listening. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Phones answered by Barb King. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Have a lovely weekend, and we will be back Monday at 2 for a Medical Monday. Right now, stand by for the best of our knowledge.